Welcome to the Edgy Beat podcast, where we tune into the rhythm of education. We are your hosts, Mandy Freilich and Sarah Thomas, and we are bringing you the freshest beats from the streets of learning and education. And so our plan really with this is each episode, we're going to dive into the most recent news stories, TikToks, social media posts, or anything else that strikes our fancy. So we're going to try to catch the beat together. So how are you doing, Dr. Thomas?
I am doing great. How about yourself? How's everything going?
Good, good. It's it's been kind of a crazy week because just got back from a conference and all of those kinds of things. So how about you?
Yeah, just a lot of just insanity, the middle of the year, you know, just wildness going on right now. And this yesterday was a Mondayest Monday to ever Monday. So, you know, but today has been a lot more chill. You know, it's been a lot better. So, yeah. And glad to have you back.
Yes. I'd like to say it's good to be back, but Florida, and I live in Wisconsin. So,
the weather.
Yeah. It was 80 degrees, so I can't complain.
My gosh. I'm so jealous. We over here in the DMV, we got up to like, I want to say 70 one day last week. So, you know, I'm not too jealous, but you know, I wish it was like 80 every day.
Yeah. That's the perfect temperature to me, is that 80 degrees ish or whatever. Sure. So we're going to get started. First part of every show, we're going to talk about adulting. I do adulting because I feel like that's something, that everybody struggles with, or people struggle with. So why don't you start us out? What is your adulting, either something that you're challenged at or something that's going, like you're just knocking it out of the park while adulting?
Yeah. So, you know, the beginning of the year, people come with resolutions. You get like a whole lot of promises that we make to ourselves and this, that, and the other. So this year I didn't really do that. I was just like, let me just kind of continue doing what I'm doing and try to get better at it. So towards the end of last year, I would say, then, I started doing a lot of research, started listening to podcasts and opening my mind to things that people have been telling me for years that I just did not pay attention to, because I thought, oh, they must be wrong. But I was just like, all right, let me just go ahead and give it a shot. And I remember we've had like some conversations about this as well that have really expanded my thinking. But to kind of tie a nice bow on it, yesterday I was listening to a podcast, and what they were saying, that women's fitness goals, depending on what your goals are, and this may sound counterintuitive, and it is counterintuitive, but they were saying, like, eat like a bodybuilder. Eat like you're getting ready to get on the stage and do the rah, you know, all those muscle poses. Like, eat like that. So that means more calories, more protein. And that, to me, just light bulb went off. Like, one other podcast I was listening to said, just plan your day and start with your protein first, like, you know, and set your protein up, and anything after that, then whatever, you know. I mean, obviously fit within, don't go crazy, but get your protein in first, prioritize that, and then let everything else fall into place. And I've been trying this. I'm just like, man, this is amazing. So, you know, will it work? I mean, preliminary reports say yes, but we'll see what the end goal is. I'll be able to report back in like maybe a month or so, hopefully being all, you know.
Yeah, you're gonna be buff.
Yeah. I'm gonna be like Chewy from TLC. That's not, I'm just joking.
Yeah, but in 3 months and you'll be in a bikini on this show, like all of your bodybuilder poses. That's hilarious. I think one of the things that I am struggling with a little bit, and it's funny because for you and I, we're in this opposite place with this, just a tad, but I had my daughter has, my last daughter, my youngest daughter, she is she got accepted to a bunch of schools, and she's kind of deciding where she wants to go for college. And she has, I think, kind of decided on the University of Minnesota. That's the one she's leaning towards. And last night she came up and was really upset and crying because she said she didn't want to leave us for school. And, you know, she's a teenager and she has some of the teenager things, you know, a lot of the teenager angst happening. And so like, I started tearing up but laughing, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad to hear that because I thought you didn't like us. And she started laughing and she's like, no, I will miss you. And so we're just kind of, you know, working through that. Like, it's a lot of change in a short period of time. You know, like, she goes off to school, we become empty nesters. Like, it's a lot of things. So kind of working on that and what that looks like, and trying to remember to slow down and pay more attention to her because she won't be, you know, living in our house in another year. So that's kind of like the adulting stuff I'm dealing with right now.
Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. Like, that is just, oh man.
Yeah. And like, you're kind of like on the opposite end of that because, you know, you have baby K and not, it's not, you know, you're a few years off from that point, but.
Oh yeah. Yeah. She's 18 months. So not 18 years. So we got a while to go. We got a while. Yeah. We're dealing with teething and stuff like that, but yeah, but you got the big kids.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like teething and teenaged angst aren't actually that far away from each other. Right. They sound very, like, very, very similar, surprisingly similar. So,
<For sure.
laughs> So again, we have quite the lineup set up for you today. And we're going to start out with our EduBeat news. Now, our EduBeat news is actually a video from a lady named Tia Holloway. She is she's got a lot of Instagram followers. She's called Talking Tia on Instagram. I highly recommend that you follow her. She's very vocal about some of the things happening in education. And I would say 98% of the time, I think everything she says is amazing. And so I highly, highly recommend her channel. But the video we had picked out for today, I'm just going to play. And so she puts out these reels and shares them out. And so just give me 1 minute here to get that set up. There we go.
So let me hop real quick because I think I speak on behalf of all teachers when I say this. Yes, the cell phone is an issue, but it becomes a bigger issue in the classroom when the person calling, FaceTime, and texting the phone is the student's parent, okay? Because now you have a child trying to decide, do they pick up the phone for their parent or listen to the teacher making the rules, okay? That's all I'm saying. So you could help us out in the classroom if you could refrain from texting your kid or calling your kid or FaceTiming your kid when you know they're in class. That's all I'm saying.
I can dig it.
Yeah. you know, and it was interesting because I've had a conversation with a few people we had a post in the EduMatch group a little bit ago that talked about from Dr. Matt Rhodes that talked about cell phones in the classroom he pulled in some really interesting studies. Like, if you go into the group and you find it, I've searched Dr. Matt Rhodes, I highly recommend reading the post. And I thought that it's so interesting how far we've swung with this. Because in the beginning, like when my kids were younger, I did get my son a phone when he was in sixth grade. And it was a safety thing for sure. And I felt more comfortable knowing that if something were happening, he could contact me. And I still believe, maybe even more so now, that that's really important. But the even though I used to be a huge advocate for cell phones in the classroom because, you know, it increased the things students could do educationally on their phones, I'm starting to wonder if they're becoming more of a distraction than they are useful in the classroom. And then to know that parents are FaceTiming their children at school is a whole nother level of that. So what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. So the last time I was like in a classroom, like for real, with the exception of when I was kind of helping to cover classes in my district, but in a physical classroom was 2015. So I think that my view, I don't really know. Like I honestly don't know. Like I would need to, you know, do a lot of I would definitely need to familiarize myself with the viewpoints of my colleagues before chiming in on it. I'll say that when I was teaching, then it was a tremendous asset. But again, that was 2015. I'll say that, and I hope that he doesn't mind me quoting him, but my husband teaches, and he had a change in perspective when he started using it instructionally, and the kids would take pictures of their work and turn it in on Google Classroom that way. That was a few years back. So I don't know how he feels about it right now. We have not revisited it, you know, the topic since he made that shift, but I think that it's a very interesting discussion, and I'm definitely intrigued by all the conversation going on around it.
Yeah, same. And there's, I feel like with this, you know, the topic of cell phones in particular, it is very, there are so many valid points.
Yeah.
it's not even one of those issues where they're, some of the points are kind of irrelevant and don't matter. There are so many valid points on both sides that it's difficult. And I remember being a tech director, and I couldn't believe how many times I would get a phone call from parents, and it wasn't about their kids' cell phones usually, although I did get a couple calls where they were asking me this about their kids' cell phones, but that they would say to me, my child cannot have a device at home because they can't handle having it at home. They're using it all the time. And I thought it was so interesting that I was expected to parent their child's device from school. And it really, I'm all for making those connections and trying to help parents and things, but, and I'm all for supporting them, but at what point do people have to take responsibility for their own? And so that was something I really struggled with. And I did have a couple parents actually call me about their child's cell phone. We don't know what to do. What are your tips for us handling our child with their cell phone at home? I didn't buy the cell phone. You guys, you know, like you guys have to figure that out. I'm not sure, you know, and I'd give them the same tips that I would give for any other device. But ultimately, I did it to help establish the relationship, but it really wasn't my job. So it's a difficult conversation for sure. And one of Dr. Matt's, in his article, says some of the data that he collected was about kids going outside and playing, and from 15 years ago, and those types of things. And one of my sort of arguments about it was that, well, it's hard to use that data. We don't live in the same world we did 15 years ago. So to say that, we need kids to put down the cell phone so they go outside and play, I totally agree. But to use data from that era when it just wasn't the same is difficult. So
that's fair. I hear you. I hear you on that. like, you know, it's funny because we were just having a conversation about that, like maybe about a week ago or so. I was talking to my folks and we were trying to see if kids still go out and play because it just snowed around here like last week. And it's crazy because it was also like 70 degrees another day last week. So that's climate change for you. But anyway, we had two snow days in 1 week. And I was thinking back to when I was a kid and about sliding down the hill at my parents' house. And I was just like, oh, well, maybe my daughter could do that one day. And I was just like, wait a minute, do kids still do that? Like, you know, and I think they do, but I don't think it's like as much a thing as it used to be. And maybe it is because they're constantly on their devices. I honestly don't know. But one thing I do want to point out, common sense, and I hope they still have this, but I saw that they had some resources that parents could use with their kids, like a contract for, you know, for cell phone use or things like that. So I thought that was really cool. Yeah, I guess I'm gonna find out firsthand in a few years. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, and I do think that there's an interesting wave of kids coming up, next generations that are starting to say, we don't want to spend our whole lives on cell phones. And you know, and like my daughter has gone into this space now. My older daughter, and when she came home for Christmas, she would say, "You two are like iPad kids. You are always on your phones." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm answering like emails for work." You know, so like there's the way that you're using the phone, but you know, she's kind of part of that movement of students that are saying, yeah, we don't, I feel like it's, you know, both ways. Like you have the kids who are addicted to them and on them all the time, but there is a movement of kids that's coming up saying like, we want to do other things. Yeah. And some that have completely gotten rid of their cell phones entirely and don't even use them. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens moving forward for sure.
Absolutely. Let's see what the alphas do with this. The generation alphas that are coming up. I'm so excited to see like when they grow up, like how they're going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to rule the world for sure.
Oh yeah. Pandemic babies.
Yeah. Yeah. All those pandemic babies. For... So we have another part of our podcast is called EduBeat Redacted. And in EduBeat Redacted, what we do is we have found some article headlines for today that have that were interesting that we want to talk about, but have redacted some of the words for our counterpart to be able to try to guess what it is. And so we're going to take a look at this first one. And if you have any guesses, you can put your guesses in the comments as well. And so we have blank, vote for school blank, the case for lowering voting ages in blank.
So I'm supposed to fill in the blanks.
Yeah, fill in the blanks.
Whew, all right. So should people vote for school uniforms? The case for lower voting ages in
fashion?
Right? Okay, let me bring it back. Okay, so this last part is throwing me. So the case for lower voting ages in, I'm going to say America. So should, I still don't know. I don't know. Do we get hints? Can we phone a friend? Like,
okay, phone a friend. Maybe we should add that in. That might be a funny thing to add in. So this one is, should students vote for school boards?
Oh,
the case lowering voting ages in local elections. And so there is a movement to be able to get students into voting and get them to understand the processes of voting and the politics of voting and all of those things at an earlier age. And so they've started some places, have started to lower the age of the voting restriction age to something like 16, so that students can have a say in the school board votes. And so there is this month, the school board of Newark, New Jersey became the latest city to allow 16-year-olds to vote in their local school board elections.
Wow.
So what do you think?
That's pretty dope. Like, I know there's some school boards that have like student members of the board, and I think that that's amazing, but this is even better. Like, yeah, let them vote, you know? We definitely need to have our kids having a say, you know, they're our primary stakeholder. So yeah, I would agree with that.
And I also think that a lot of times, especially the general public, underestimates how truly important the school board is. You know, the school board is technically your superintendent's boss. Like, that's what they are. So if you're, you know, like, and it's just being, you know, having been at the district level and watching some of these things happening, and like the school board makes a decision, and the superintendent takes the fall because people don't understand that the school board was the one that made the decision. Mm. And, you know, like reason 1 through 15, I would never want to be a superintendent because it's just like they are essentially your boss. And so I think having, instead of making school board elections basically like, well, we have nobody else, or a popularity contest, being able to have, you know, students who are going to be directly impacted by those people, have them vote, I think is a fantastic idea.
I think so too. And I think you would make a dope superintendent. That's just my two cents.
Well, I appreciate that. It's never going to happen.
Never going to happen. All right.
Never going to get it.
Yeah.
I'd much rather just stay the CEO of Edumatch and be happy with that. That is my goal.
I'm winning. Team Edumatch.
Yeah. So should we go on to yours then?
Yeah, I have a feeling like mine's going to be super easy now, because that was hard. Yeah, that was hard. Okay. For mine, the new National EdTech Plan just came out. So according to the National EdTech Plan, the blank, blank, blank is between and within those systems that provide every educator the time and support they need to build their capacities to create learning experiences with digital tools and those that do not. So fill in the blanks, the blank, blank, blank. I need to go to my cheat sheet.
Is it something to do with AI?
Not quite. I mean,
no,
it can be, but those aren't the words.
So, educator professional learning.
No.
This is not easy. Like, people might look at this and go, that's so easy. This is not easy.
Okay, good. I got a little curveball in there.
What's the name? Like, is it something with like technology coaches?
No, but you're on the right track.
Okay. Tell me what it is.
All right. So This was a new one to me, because, you know, we've all heard of the digital use divide. We've heard of the digital access divide. This is the digital design divide. So the digital design divide, and in the new plan, they say that it addresses opportunities for educators to expand their professional learning and build capacities necessary to design learning experiences enabled by technology. So you were on the right track when you said AI and when you said tech coaches and things like that. Yeah, but the digital design divide.
That's really interesting. So that does go back a little bit to what people had been saying during the pandemic with that some of the equity issues weren't necessarily access to equity, but instead the knowledge of the teacher of ad tech tools and how to use them effectively. So that's kind of what that's talking about, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have to give a shout out to Dr. Nicole Howard and to Regina Schaefer. So we did a series with ISTE on digital equity. And one of those big pieces was about us leveling up as educators in order to provide those transformational learning opportunities. So, you know, that's definitely a huge part of it. There's a big difference between, you know, exclusively using technology to put a kid on a prepackaged program. And not to say that those in and of themselves are a bad thing, but if that's all you do and, you know, you don't give the students the chance to create and the chance to explore and the chance to actually do something with it, you know, then that's definitely inequitable as opposed to students who have access to, you know, X, Y, and Z where they can, they're free to explore and create and get a leg up in life. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would even go as far as to say, you know, like productivity, a teacher's understanding, or even a principal's understanding of productivity and how quickly they can get things done is also a divide, you know, between like people who can sort of level up in their efficiency by learning it really well, and then they get things done quicker to fill up for more time doing different things other than education and their teaching, more of a work-life balance. There's also a divide there, I would say, you know, because if you can level up in your ed tech knowledge to use it, like even AI for productivity and things, that also becomes a type of digital divide for the teacher and what they, the time that they can provide to their families and things. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And when we are, you know, just kind of riffing off of what you just said, when we're working with students and working with AI, you know, then they can teach themselves a lot when it comes to like ChatGPT, et cetera, et cetera. But there's going to be like a huge difference between the students who know how to engineer a prompt well and the students who don't, you know, and there'll be that difference also, you know, from the students who don't have that content knowledge and the ones who do, who can, you know, use that prompt engineering and get a much better output. So that's going to count for a lot, like in the future. It's already counting now. So, you know, it's going to be increasingly important.
Absolutely. And we had this discussion, you know, a little while ago where I was saying, you know, it's going to be where people are like, how is AI going to change education? And I said, I feel like one of the biggest ways that AI is going to change education is it's going to change students needing to get the right answers to students needing to be able to ask the right questions. And we've said that for a while, but we've never had anything tangible to say that's a good, you know, like that's that, like they weren't getting, how can I say this? They didn't need to get information from the question that they were answering necessarily or asking necessarily or how they were asking it. It was more based in like curiosity. But now with prompt engineering, how you ask things, the specificity you use, the questions that you use, the how you give the AI context to what you need, that matters now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, the world has changed so much in a short period of time with generative AI just booming everywhere and, you know, becoming more and more ubiquitous. So 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, my friend. Well, we have come to the end of this podcast and we are right within our half an hour limit, just like we wanted. So yeah, like virtual high five.
Hey.
Okay. all right. So that is a wrap on today's EduBeat. Thank you for tuning in and sinking your heart to the pulse of educational innovation with us. Remember, every beat we shared today is a step towards enriching our learning communities. I'm Mandy Freilich with my talented co-host, Sarah Thomas, one of my favorite people on earth. reminding you to keep listening, keep learning, and keep beating to the rhythm of change. Until next time, let's keep the educational conversation alive. If you see an article, a video, a TikTok, any kind of social media post or media that you would like us to talk about, please email them to podcast@edumatchers.org, and we will take a look at that, and perhaps you will be your submission will be featured on the show. So thank you so much, everybody, for stopping by and listening, and we hope that you have an amazing week.